Hello, my friends, and welcome to Hope for Your Heart. This is Pastor Calvin Corbett coming to you from Hickory Ridge Community Church, and we're actually recording the broadcast at the church today. We're so glad that you're joining us on this Monday broadcast. Amazing things are happening, and you are part of the amazing things that are happening in the greater Hampton Roads area. So we're continuing our series on the book of Jonah. This is Jonah Part 4, and I'm entitling the message today, Grace for the Returning. But before we get too far into the message, I always want to remind you of God's moving in our area and what God is doing and how He is blessing us. And it's just amazing to think that in the middle of a coronavirus that people are getting saved, people are getting baptized and added to the church. So we are so excited about that, thanking the Lord for all that He has done. You know, if you take a moment just to thank God for all the things He's done, you will be amazed to think of the things that He has done. Well, we're in Jonah chapter 3. I'm going to go ahead and read the whole chapter. It's not that long. And this is actually on the Message translation. So it might be a little bit different than what you're accustomed to. But I really like the way Eugene Peterson put this together. And so here it is. Jonah chapter number 3, beginning at verse number 1. Next, God spoke to Jonah a second time. Up on your feet and on your way to the big city of Nineveh. Preach to them. They're in a bad way. And I can't ignore it any longer. Now, I begin by looking at this phrase a second time. I don't know about you, but I'm so thankful that God gives me second chances to do His will in my life. And we see that Nineveh is in a bad way. They need a message given to them. They need the opportunity to get on the right track. And God says to Jonah, Jonah, you're my man. And we look at verse number 3, and it says, this time, Jonah started off straight for Nineveh, obeying God's order to the letter. Nineveh was a big city, very big. It took 3 days to walk across it. As a matter of fact, the walls around the city of Nineveh were 8 miles long. But verse number 4 says that Jonah entered the city, went one day's walk, and he preached. And here is the 8-word sermon. In 40 days, Nineveh will be smashed. Now the people of Nineveh listened and trusted God. They proclaimed a citywide fast and they dressed up in burlap to show their repentance. Now get this next little phrase. Everyone did it. The rich, the poor, the famous, the obscure, the leaders and the followers. When the messengers reached up to the king of Nineveh, he got up off his throne, threw down his royal robes, dressed up in burlap, and he sat down in the dirt. Then he issued a public proclamation throughout Nineveh, authorized by him and his leaders. And this is what he said. Not one drop of water, not one bite of food for man, woman, or animal, including your herds and your flocks. Dress them all, both people and animals, in burlap and send up a cry for help to God. Everyone must turn around. Turn back from an evil life and the violent ways that have stained your hands. Who knows? Maybe God will turn around and change His mind about us, quit being angry with us, and let us live. God saw what they had done, that they had turned away from their evil lies. He did change His mind about them, and what He said He would do to them, He didn't do. Now, don't you love how God gives people a second chance? We're going to talk today about grace being the opportunity to have a second chance. We would call this grace for the ones who are returning. You know, we experience God's grace when we are given a second chance. It says in verse number 1 that the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time, a second opportunity. As a matter of fact, we love second chances, don't we? Now, sometimes we don't like it when somebody that is against us gets a second opportunity, but we really like to get a second chance. As a matter of fact, in 2017, the United States unanimously passed a resolution declaring that the month of April was going to be called Second Chance Month. It's a time to focus on giving to those who have committed a crime, done their time, giving them a second chance as they're released back into community. Now, as you think about those who are given this second chance, there's a lot of people in the United States who have one time or another been incarcerated. There are 65 million Americans with criminal records, and as you think about giving them a second chance, it sounds easy to give them a second chance, but over 48,000 collateral sanctions appear across the country. Not counting just the local laws that were enacted by the municipalities, but as we think about all these laws giving to these individuals, and it makes it very difficult for them to get back into society. As a matter of fact, when you think about these restrictions, and not all of them are bad, but over half of them are restrictions that will limit a person's ability to be employed because he has a felony. When you think about the opportunities that God gives us a second chance. Now, we think about Jonah, we think about the prerogative that God had in giving him a second chance. We tend to not be so patient in giving others a second chance. Grace in the moment of second chance. That's what I want to talk to you today about. But how does it work if there is a denial of a second chance? You know, God is even gracious in the middle of that. If you're feeling like you didn't get a second chance and you don't have another opportunity, maybe you've been married and your marriage ended in divorce and you're thinking, well, how am I going to go on? I'm not going to get a second chance at that marriage. Well, I want you to know you're not the first one to experience being rejected of a second chance. But I do want you to know that God, even in the midst of sometimes saying no to a second chance, still offers grace. I'm going to give you three examples of somebody who was not given a second chance, but was still given an opportunity to see God's grace. Well, let's say exhibit number one. We'll look at a guy by the name of David. You probably know him as King David. King David wanted to build a temple for the Lord, and it's recorded in 1 Chronicles chapter 17, and David's thoughts are turning to the temple of the Lord as he's walking around his palace one day. He's walking into the palace, and he notices that he has a beautiful place to live. The walls are lined with cedar. And so he called up Nathan the prophet, and he says, you know, this is not right that I am living in this beautiful palace, and God is being worshipped in a tent. So Nathan says, you know, I think this is a pretty good idea. Nathan thought the idea was wonderful. Yes, go ahead, David. Proceed with your plans. Well, Nathan went home that night, and apparently he slept on it. Maybe he prayed more diligently upon that. And he came back, and he said, now listen, David, the Lord has told me that you cannot build a temple. And the reason that you cannot build that temple, the answer is given to us in 1 Chronicles chapter 22. The word of the Lord came to me, that's Nathan saying, you have shed much blood, David, and you have waged great wars. You shall not build a house to my name, because you have shed so much blood before me on the earth. You see, David was forbidden from building that temple himself. He had the opportunity, however, to see God graciously be involved in allowing him to put the plans together for the temple and to start gathering the materials together for that temple. As a matter of fact, this is what he said to Solomon in 1 Chronicles chapter 22, verses 16 through 17. He says, I have taken great pains to provide for the temple of the Lord. And this is what he had, 100,000 talents of gold, 1,000,000 talents of silver, quantities of bronze and iron too great to be weighed, and wood and stone. And you may add to them. You have many workers, stone cutters, masons, carpenters, as well as these who are skilled in every kind of work in gold and in silver, bronze and iron, craftsmen beyond number. Now begin the work, and the Lord will be with you. Now notice David didn't get to build a temple, but he helped the one who was going to build it. You know, based upon the amounts recorded in the Bible, it has been estimated that over 20 tons of gold were used in the building of the temple. In researching the cost of building this temple today, the materials, the labor cost, all of that you put into account on building this particular temple, the precious metals, all of the massive stones, each one weighing many tons, each had to be transported. There was huge cedar beams that had to be brought in from the south, from Lebanon. Tens of thousands of workers assisted in the temple's construction. The total cost of building that in today's dollars would have been over $150 billion. So here's my question to you today. How do you respond when you can't do what you want to do? Are you patient and realize that God might have a plan B for my life? Well, there's another example that we notice in the Old Testament. How do you respond when you can't go where you want to go? And I'm thinking about Moses. Moses wanted to go into the promised land. In Numbers chapter 20, verse number 8, we discover why he was prohibited from going into the promised land. Now, this is kind of a sad account when you read the overall account of Moses leading the people of Israel. Now, he had an unenviable job. He went to Pharaoh and says, "Let my people go." 10 plagues pursued, and finally Pharaoh let the people of Israel go. They had been in bondage for over 400 years. Now Moses was given the awesome responsibility of leading those people into the promised land. They were to go through the wilderness, a journey that should have taken them about 7, maybe 9 days, ends up taking 40 years. Moses gets them right up to the edge of the promised land, and he's so looking forward to going in there, and all of a sudden the people start complaining. They said that they needed some water. So Moses begins leading the people, and they find a place of water, and they discover that the water is not exactly what they expected. Moses was told by God that if he would just speak to the rock, that water would flow out of this rock. Well, Moses didn't speak to the rock, but he yelled at the rock. He screamed at the rock. Now, if you think about this, this is a small thing in our way of thinking. In Deuteronomy chapter 32, we discover that it was a big thing in the eyes of God. And it was big because Moses disobeyed a direct command. You know, the Bible says, "Of whom much is given, much is required." There are some things that if you have been walking with the Lord for a long time, you can't get away with anymore. Because God has given you more revelation, God has given you more grace, God has given you more opportunities, and so you don't have a wide window of disobedience. You have a very narrow window of disobedience. We also see that the problem that Moses had is that he took credit for bringing forth the water. He said to the people of Israel, "You have done all this complaining. I tell you what, I'm going to bring some water forth for you." And the sin that he committed was in front of all of Israel. So this is what God said in Deuteronomy chapter 32. "Because you broke faith with me in the midst of the people of Israel at the waters of Meribath Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin, and because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the people of Israel, you shall see not the land before you. You shall not go there. You're not going to go into that land that I'm going to give to the people of Israel." Now, the account of Moses' death is found just a couple chapters later in Deuteronomy chapter 34, and he was not allowed to enter the promised land because he and Aaron had sinned against the Lord. They failed to honor God before the people at Kadesh. Aaron died soon after that event. His death is recorded in the same chapter. God told Moses and Eleazar to go up to Mount Hor. Aaron's priestly robes were removed and his son Eleazar put them on, and Aaron dies in the presence of Moses and Eleazar. It would seem that Moses' death is similar, although it happened many years apart. The people of Israel are ready now to enter into the promised land, the land of Canaan, and Moses and his work is finished. God calls him to climb up the side of the mountain, Mount Nebo. And God says, "You know, Moses, you can't go into that promised land, but I'm going to allow you to take a glimpse and see all of the territory that Israel is about to conquer." After that, the Bible specifically says that he died and that the Lord buried him, Deuteronomy 34, 5, and 6. So here's my question to you today. How do you respond when you can't go where you want to go? We ask you, first of all, how do you respond when you can't do what you want to do? How do you respond when you can't go where you want to go? God's grace is sufficient. Moses had the opportunity to see that promised land from a distance. Here is my third Old Testament example. How do you respond when you can't be who you wanted to be? In this particular illustration, I'm thinking about Saul, King Saul, and how King Saul lost the throne. In 1 Samuel 15:26, we see that Samuel said to Saul, "I can't return with you because you are rejected and you have rejected what the Lord has said. Because you have rejected what the Lord has said, I am going to be removing you as king over Israel." Now, this is also kind of a sad account as to what happened in the life of Saul. Twice, Saul was told that he would be replaced as king for two separate offenses that he committed. That first offense we discovered is found in 1 Samuel chapter 22, where God told Saul to go in and defeat the Amalekites and to destroy all the livestock and all of the kings and don't take any of the profit back. Destroy everything. Well, he kept some of the sheep, he kept the king alive, and he partially obeyed God. We also see that he was a person who failed miserably when he was getting ready to go to war one day. Now, that is kind of found in 1 Samuel chapter 13. Saul was not a prophet. Saul was a king. In order for Saul to go to battle, he had to wait. And he was instructed to wait 7 days before he went to battle. He was on in Gilgad waiting and waiting and waiting. But he got very impatient. He didn't wait long enough for Samuel to come and pray over him and to offer up sacrifices before they went to battle. And so Saul decided that he would go ahead and offer animal sacrifices. He stepped in the position of being a prophet. When Saul discovered his error, he was devastated. You know, you think about the death of Saul. It was a sad death. It was a shameful death. God took the throne from Saul. As a matter of fact, Saul's son Jonathan could not follow him as king. God was going to allow David to be the king. Now, Saul knew this before this happened, and maybe that's why he burned with a hatred for David. But as we look at this story, it's very interesting as we look at his death. His death was such a sad death. Let me explain to you the scene on the battlefield the day that Saul died. You see, the armies of Israel are put to shame before their enemies, and they are badly being defeated. The bodies of the wounded and the dead are littered across the landscape. King Saul, that powerful, that handsome king, is struck by a warrior's arrow. Near the king lay the bodies of his three sons. He knows that he cannot escape and that he cannot live. Saul seeks the help of his armor bearer and asks him to go ahead and end his life. The man would not help Saul, so Saul takes his own life by falling on his sword. A reign that had begun so well ends in suicide after a tragic military defeat. What a tragedy. What a sad death. But his death was also a shameful death. Although it was sad, it was extremely shameful. There are two reasons why I say this. It was shameful because of what happened. After his death, the body of Saul was desecrated by the enemies of Israel. He was beheaded, and his head was set on top of a stake, and they ran from city to city, showing that symbol of Saul's head. The Philistines were mocking King Saul. To add insult to injury, when they got back to their home, they took the head of Saul and they nailed it on the wall of their temple. What a shameful death. What a mockery, not only to Saul, but to the nation of Israel. So here's my question to you. How do you respond when you can't be who you want to be? Do you trust God's grace and God's provision? Or do you do like Saul? Do you step in and kind of take care of things on your own way? Well, there's one final thing that I want to give as an illustration that God's grace is sufficient even if he doesn't give us a second chance. Here's my fourth question. How do you respond when you can't beat what you want to defeat? And by this, I'm talking about Paul and that thorn in the flesh that he had. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, it tells us that there was a great revelation that was given to the apostle Paul. Paul understood this great revelation. He also understood that he had this thorn in the flesh, and we're not exactly sure what that thorn in the flesh is. But you know, the more I study the life of the apostle Paul, the more I think that thorn in the flesh may have been those who rejected the message of Christ, may have been those who went against the apostle Paul. It may not have been a physical affliction, although it could have been, but it could have been those who were going against him. And I say that because I look at who he was writing to when he prays that God will remove that thorn in the flesh. He prays three times for God to remove that thorn, and he gets this response, and he shares it in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Paul says this, "In order to keep me from being conceited, I was given a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me." Three times he said, "I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about weakness so that Christ's power may rest in me.'" So I've got some really good news for you today. If you can't beat what you want to defeat, God's grace is sufficient. Paul couldn't get rid of that thorn in the flesh, that messenger of Satan that buffeted him. But God said to him, don't worry about that. My grace is sufficient for you. That thorn in the flesh is keeping you humble, Paul. Because you have been giving a surpassing great revelation, I've got to keep you humble so that this great revelation won't go to your head. Well, today so far, we've talked about God's grace and second chances. We've talked about sometimes God doesn't give us a second chance, but he gives us grace in spite of not getting that second chance. Here's the second thing that I want to drive home today in the broadcast. God's grace to respond is seen when we respond to simple challenges. Going back to the story of Jonah chapter 3, verses 3 and 4. Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord and went to Nineveh. Now, Nineveh was a very large city. We talked about that. Took 3 days to go through it. Jonah began by going a day's journey into the city, proclaiming, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown. Now, here's something that I want you to get from this passage. When we think about change, oftentimes we take on too much of a change. I put it this way, by the inch it's a cinch, by the yard it's hard. When we attempt to change too much, we end up changing nothing at all. Here we see the Ninevites are responding to a very simple message. Now I want you to know that if we were in the shoes of Jonah, we probably would have added much more to the sermon that we were proclaiming to the Ninevites. But he just spoke 8 words. 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown. You see, one of the battles I think that we tend to have is we tend to share our message, not God's message. You see, something is missing of the message of Jonah that many of us would probably have shared. This is what is missing. Jonah did not say this. He did not say, I am Jonah. I am the one that the Lord came to with a message. I am Jonah, the one that was swallowed up in a great fish. I am Jonah, the one that was tossed overboard in a ship because of a great storm. I am Jonah, the one who went the opposite direction, but God allowed a storm to come along into my life. I was running from God. I was doing my own thing. I was following my own agenda. I told those sailors on that ship to throw me overboard. That's right. Just toss me into the sea and that storm will end. As I was fighting for my life in that sea, a big fish swallowed me up. I prayed like I never prayed before. I wrestled with God. I gave that great fish indigestion I prayed so hard, and he spit me up on the dry ground. When I landed on that shore, I cleaned myself up, and I started running as fast as I could to get here to tell you, I'm a man with a message, and you had better repent, because if you don't, in 40 days, this city will be destroyed. Now, if you think about that, I think that's what most of us would have done with that sermon. We would have put the big old I in there. We would have put ourselves in the center of that story. But Jonah doesn't do that. Jonah says very simply, in 40 days, this city will be destroyed if you don't repent. You know, you think about most famous speeches, dream speeches. I think about I Have a Dream and Let Freedom Ring. These mantras still evoke passion and reflection today. Another mantra in this dream speech, and one that doesn't get too much notice, is we can never be satisfied with the status quo of segregation. I think about all of these great messages that we have listened to through the years. Grace is found in responding to a simple challenge, not the long, profound challenges that spend a lot of time talking about me, myself, and I, but simple proclamations. I'm talking about the Gettysburg Address that was delivered by Abraham Lincoln on November the 19th, 1863. This short speech that I'm going to read to you in just a moment is a speech that does not include one personal pronoun, I, throughout the whole speech. Here is the text of that speech that Abraham Lincoln gave, November 19th, 1863. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, and conceived and dedicated to the proclamation that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who gave their lives to this nation so that we might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate We cannot consecrate. We cannot hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it. Far above our poor power to add or detract, the world will little note nor long remember what we say here. But it can never forget what they did. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work where they fought and have thus so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to the cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we have highly resolved that these who have died have not died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Hickory Ridge Community Church is located at 3220 South Battlefield Boulevard, Chesapeake, Virginia. Sunday service times are at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. We would love for you to join us. For more information, you go to our website at www.hrcc7.org. No matter what you're going through, remember, in Jesus Christ, there is always hope for your heart.